All right, good morning. Let me get going here. Well, this is gonna be my favorite presentation of all the topics that we do. And so let's get started. World History Part 6, Human, Smart and Beautiful. We've looked at evidence of how tall and strong we were in different cultures and in different time periods, but how smart were we? We see it pop up at times. What's that all about? So the question that we keep asking and that we're trying to slowly build a picture on is it apes, aliens, or Adam? That's what we're trying to flesh out. Which one makes the most sense after we've looked at all the facts? Now, of the three, apes, aliens, or Adam, let's just flesh those out just for a second. Apes, or basically evolution, says we came from nothing to something by itself, small to big, dumb to smart. Now, typically, evolutionists will have a fit and try to say, oh, you're oversimplifying that. But really, in the end, that is what we are saying. That's what evolution is boiled down to in its simplest forms. Even if we've gone up and down, short to tall, to back to short, it don't matter what we've done through history, in the end, this is what it is saying. The other thing is the alien theory, which is also evolution, because it's also saying nothing to something by itself, small to big, but the dumb to smart is in jumps and with help from other, you know, beings out there in the universe. So very similar, a little bit of difference. And then the Adam or creation theory says, also surprisingly, from nothing to something, but because God created it or spoke it into existence. So it also is saying something a little bit different in size, from big to small. And in as far as intelligence, we're saying that we were originally astoundingly smart and now we're okay smart. So we're gonna look at, of the three, we're gonna look at just a bunch of savants and prodigies to flesh this topic out. But the question I'm bringing up is, does it make more sense to say, you know, the Bible says that Genesis 1:6, let us make man in our image according to our likeness, and behold, it was very good. That's kind of a clue as to what we were originally like. And I think that when you look at the fossil record of giant plants and animals, and you look at, you know, humans being really tall and strong at different times in history, I think that you start to get a glimpse of maybe we were really smart at one point, magnificently so. All right, so the first one that we're going to look at is Jedediah Buxton. He was probably an autistic savant. He was born in 1707 and he couldn't write. He was obsessed with numbers. He counted the steps of people at dances and the, you know, number of words at plays. So he was just like a classic autistic savant. But he was tested by the Royal Society in 1754 and he was able to calculate up to 39 numbers. Like, so that is fascinating. But my first thought is I'm a skeptic through and through. And I'm like, okay, you know, that's something from the 1700s. I don't know if I can buy that. Which, by the way, autistic savants, just to give you a little bit of background on them, 1 in 10 often have a splinter skill. So they have some kind of unusual ability that the average person maybe doesn't have. So although I'm going to skip and start going into the 18 and 1900s and stuff, I do want to give you one more from the 1700s, just because I can't resist. This one is really cool. And there's a lot of plausible, very interesting information on him. So I think this is a legitimate one. Thomas Fuller was seemingly normal. He was just a prodigy, which means instead of being somebody that couldn't tie his shoes and had to have help with everything, but just had an unusual skill, a prodigy is a normal person, but with an unusual ability that the average person would have to take years of study to be able to accomplish, but they can just do innately. So he was born in 1710. He was brought to America as a slave to Presley and Elizabeth Cox, who were both illiterate. He was known all over the Eastern seaboard. When he was 70 years old, William Hartshorne and Samuel Coates of Pennsylvania, they sent for him because they wanted to satisfy their curiosity. So they asked him how many seconds in a year and a half, and he answered correctly in about 2 minutes, 47,336,400. Asked how many seconds a man had lived, that is 70 years, 17 days, and 12 hours, he answered correctly in a minute and a half, let's see, 2,210,500,800. Well, one of the guys thought he was wrong until Fuller had to remind him of leap years. So he corrected him on that. Anyway, I just love that one. So Truman Henry Safford, he's a prodigy born in 1836 in Vermont. He was asked by a priest at age 9 to multiply by itself that number that you see right there, which if it's a little bit fuzzy, it's 6 sets of 365. So 365, 365, you know what I mean? So 6 sets of those, multiply that long number by itself. In less than a minute, he came up with the correct answer with no paper. And I don't even know how many, I mean, it's so far above quadrillion that I don't even know how to read it off to you other than listing all the numbers. So that's what that big long blue number is right there. He developed a new method for calculating moon rising and setting that took a fourth of the time of what they had been doing. And he became the second director of the Hopkins Observatory. So you can look him up if you want. He's quite interesting. So let's get into even more modern times. Shakuntala Devi, she's a prodigy. She was born in 1929 in India, and her father was a trapeze artist and used her to amaze crowds with her calculating abilities at the age of 6. And over her lifetime, she did a bunch of interesting things, but I what I found most fascinating was in 1977, she beat a supercomputer twice. Now granted, they didn't, you know, move quite as lightning speed as today, but they obviously were, you know, very fast. She did the first cube root of 188,132,517, which, by the way, is 573, if you didn't happen to know that. And then she took 50 seconds, that's 50 seconds, to do in her head the 23rd root of a 201-digit number. And that's that big, long red number you see right there. So also in 1980, she multiplied... I think that's 7,686,369,000,000, blah, 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 by another, you know, same length number. She did that in 28 seconds with no calculator. So it gets literally to the border of bizarre. I mean, the abilities some human beings have had through history are unbelievable, which I find particularly fascinating. Now, just as a side note, it's interesting to compare her with, you know, mental calculating, you know, people that, like, they have a contest every year, and you can learn tricks to do math in your head, but these people are the real deals. They're not doing tricks to be able to do this. But if you compare, like, the 2010 World Cup mental calculating person was Brianchi Samani. I forget how old she was, but she was on the young side at that point. She solved the cube root of 10 different six-digit numbers, and it took her 6 minutes and 51 seconds. 2 years later, she did the same thing in 2 minutes, 43 seconds. So she was learning and getting better. Her mind was scaling up and being able to do this faster. But I'd still say that Shakuntala Devi was not only faster at everything from day one, but again, she wasn't using any tricks or anything like that. Very interesting. Okay, Solomon Sharashevsky, he was born in Russia in 1886, and I bring him up even though he's older because he was extremely well studied. This guy was fascinating. He was studied by the famous neurosurgeon or scientist Luria. He wrote a book named The Man Named S. They could not find an edge to his memory. They would test him backwards and forwards, up and down with, I mean, lists of ridiculous length. It didn't matter. And it didn't matter how many years later that they would test him. He'd still do it backwards and forwards. Literally, they would say, okay, we'll do the list backwards. And it just, there wasn't any way to find an edge to his ability to memorize. And the one story that I just have to tell you about him that was fascinating. He was at a meeting. He worked for a newspaper and he was reprimanded for not taking notes because everybody else, all the other employees were taking notes during the meeting. And so the boss yelled at him, and to the astonishment of everyone there and to his own astonishment, because he didn't realize other people couldn't do this, he recalled the entire speech word by word to the boss. he thought everyone could do it, and nobody knew that this was ability of his. So anyway, through the years, you know, he memorized complex mathematical formulas, huge matrices, poems in foreign languages. It didn't matter. He'd all do it in a few minutes and just, yeah. So he had synesthesia. Synesthesia is something that's actually very common that a lot of people don't know about. And you may have it and not realize it, because one in 20 has this. It's where two or more senses are cross-wired. So for example, the famous, there was a famous neurosurgeon or scientist that he started writing articles in a newspaper about synesthesia and explained how, you know, if you hear a sound, maybe you'll see color, or you'll actually have a taste in your mouth, or, you know, it can be any number of combinations of these. And people started writing in going, "You mean I'm not crazy?" And this one woman wrote in and said, "Oh, I love the sound of my husband's voice. It's such a crispy, crunchy caramel brown." She had color, taste, and sound all mixed in, you know, and crossed. So that was the way she would experience sound. So this is the same thing for, you know, for this guy named S. He had all the senses crossed. And so it would trigger, just like even reading, it would sometimes be difficult for him to read, because he would be reading things and it would be evoking complete, you know, pictures and tastes and sounds and stuff. And it was just, his whole life was very distracting for him. He went to buy some ice cream one time, and he walked up to the vendor and asked her what kind of ice cream she had. And she said fruit ice cream. But he said it was like a whole pile of coals of black cinders that came bursting out of her mouth. And he says, "I couldn't bring myself to buy any ice cream after she had said it that way." It wasn't that she had said it in some kind of like snotty, snarling, weird way. It's just that for whatever reason, that's the colors and combination of sounds and, you know, things that he experienced when he, you know. So anyway, very interesting topic. One in 20 of you has it, so you might have it. I actually have a version of it. When I hear sounds, I sense shapes. So heaven help me if I'm half asleep and John sneezes all of a sudden, because the explosion in my personal space is just scary. Anyway, you might have a version of it. You'll have to look into that. Okay, so let's try to paint a picture of all the different kinds of abilities. You know, there's obviously the math and there's memory. What else? Well, let's look at music. Leslie Lemke, autistic savant, born in 1952, couldn't walk until he was 15, can't see, IQ of 58. He plays flawlessly after hearing it only once, which is actually fairly common for these musical savants. And he was playing music and singing, but he still literally couldn't talk. They came out one night because they heard this gorgeous, Tchaikovsky's concerto or something or other. I don't know, it was some amazing thing. He just was playing it, you know? And interestingly enough, he has spasticity that disappears completely. Like all of a sudden his movements become fluid, normal, and under complete control when he plays music. So there's a lot of interesting, you know, musical savants. Derek Paravicini, he's 1979, born in England, absolute pitch, can play again after hearing something only once. He began playing at the age of 2. His first concert, which was age 7, and his first big one with the Royal Philharmonic Pops Orchestra was at age 9. There's a really interesting TED Talk, by the way, that you would find interesting. You can watch that online. That showcases some amazing abilities. I'm going to show you just a quick video clip. Let me know if for some reason you can't hear it, but you should be able to. He's hilarious. He's a lot of fun to watch, you know, in concert. He enjoys playing with music and changing it up. Ellen Bordereau, I don't know if I'm pronouncing her name right. She's an autistic savant, blind again, tremendous musical abilities after, you know, perfectly after just hearing it once. Again, very common. Will transpose into rock and roll. Will transpose rock and roll into a waltz in 3/4 time or jazz into classical. She can just manipulate music in any way she wants. And she, oddly enough, can replicate uncannily every voice, every instrument, every studio sound effect. It's just amazing. But the one thing I found unusually interesting is that when she has the awareness of the perfect passing of time. So like she'd come in and sit down without a clock. She'd come in and sit down in front of the television and turn it on at the exact instant when her television program was coming on, her favorite. So, you know, just what other odd abilities? I mean, if you can track time like that internally, you know, we're going to flesh this picture out by looking at all those odd abilities. Ben Underwood, this is one that I find absolutely amazing. You want to talk about unusual abilities. Let me play you this because you literally, you can't understand or believe me unless I show it to you.
Ben Underwood is blind. Both eyes were removed when he was 3, leaving him with no vision at all. So how on earth does Ben do this? And this? And even this?
I don't think I've ever come across somebody like Ben. He was quite unique.
Ben lost his eyes to cancer, but unbelievably, he's taught himself to see with sound.
If he chooses to go out there and ride that bicycle, let him ride the bicycle.
It's got to be very smart. Somewhere in there, it's a little genius going on.
I don't consider myself blind. Ain't nothing wrong with me.
Ben uses many common aids for the blind, like speaking software for the computer, so he can jot down his rap lyrics. He's also written a book and does schoolwork on a high-tech braille writer. But what's unusual, what's truly unique, is what he doesn't use. Ben has no guide dog and never uses a white cane. He's not even using his hands. Instead, he sees with sound. He makes a sharp click which bounces back off nearby objects. Amazingly, Ben's ears pick up the echoes and he can precisely locate where things are. Ben is the only person in the world who sees using nothing but echolocation.
Yeah, except in John's brother says, except bats. He's the only human currently. There are others that do a much lower version of echolocation like that, but they just have never seen anybody like this. Unfortunately, he's passed away. The cancer did come back and it took his life. But they tested him to see how big or small of an object he could, quote, see. And he could tell if something was a column, a garbage can versus a car, when he was walking on the street, a fire hydrant versus a bench. I've seen you got to watch a documentary on him. It's fascinating. You'll see him weave, you know, like on rollerblades, weaving in and out between cars effortlessly. It's just amazing. Absolutely amazing. So anyway, let's continue on with a few other ones. Kim Peek, mega savant, born in 1951. You might have recognized, most people don't know him by his name, Kim Peek, but they know him by Rain Man. There was a movie done on him. Now, instead of having like one, maybe two abilities, he had 15 core areas. They call him a mega savant. And even NASA tested him. Now, he had no corpus callosum, which is the thing between the two hemispheres of the brain. And so that probably caused his brain, you know, to be able to communicate differently. But I'll still say that as we go through all these abilities and you see the combinations of things that people have, I think that it's not just solely because he didn't have a corpus callosum. I think that you could have these type of abilities, obviously, in other normal people. You know, so Anyway, let's go on to a couple of the interesting things about him. I'm going to play this little clip on him.
Memory. He remembers everything he's ever read. He can tell you the every city in the United States, its highways and its area codes and its zip codes and its television stations and its counties and when it was made a state. The history of any country, all the rulers and when they served, presidents of this country, when they were born, their wives, their families, all of NASA's accomplishments, when they went up, when they came down, what they're doing. He can talk to you about the Bible. He can quote scriptures. He can tell you anything about it you want to ask him about. Seems like everything he reads, he maintains. At 9 months, the neuropsychiatrist said he's severely mentally retarded. He will never be able to learn. You should put him in an institution, forget about him.
But Kim was reading encyclopedias by age 4 and had finished the high school curriculum by 14.
Goodbye, old pain. I'm a leaving Cheyenne. You know that?
How fast can he read?
He reads a page that you and I would read in 3 minutes, approximately. It takes you about 8 to 10 seconds. He reads the left page of the left eye, right page of the right eye, and remembers about 98% of it.
So, there's just no words. The guy's fascinating. I just love the, you know, you can see him in performances. He's become much more, social as he got older and he started, you know, being brought out in public like that. He's really, you know, quite interesting. All right, Daniel Tammet, Asperger, which is a type of autism. He was born in 1979 and he has synesthesia, again, a combination of senses being crossed. So every integer or number up to 10,000 has its own shape, color, and feel, which is one of the ways it helps him to, you know, remember things. Like he recognizes numbers, like 4, the number 4 he said is timid like him, and 37 is lumpy like oatmeal, and 111 is shiny and bright. So again, you can watch documentaries on all these people and it's terribly interesting. But he holds the European record for reciting pi from memory, which is 22,514 places that he went out to. Speaks English, Finnish, French, German. You can see all the languages there. He learned Icelandic in 1 week. They tried to, you know, test him to see, you know, what he was capable of, and they challenged him to learn it, which is a very difficult language. And after 1 week, they interviewed him on the television. So you can see that interview, and very, very interesting what people are capable of doing.
They don't call it Asperger's anymore.
Some do, but there are a lot of names. They're definitely expanding their comprehension and their definition of all of these things. In fact, they're now trying to make hyperlexia with 1, 2, and 3 and make that a diagnostic label so that you can get help if you're, you know, like category 3, which means you're normal. You're not withdrawn. You're not antisocial. You're capable of interacting, you know, hugs and kisses and, you know, with your parents and stuff. And yet you have bizarre and amazing abilities to read, you know, when you're very, very young, unusual, you know, abilities like that. So anyway, they're definitely constantly changing their whole way of categorizing these people, because they're realizing more and more, like we used to think that intelligence, like you just would take an IQ test and you were just intelligent, you know. Now we understand that there's intelligences. There's categories and areas, like somebody may be spatially intelligent or mathematically intelligent or musically intelligent. There's all these different intelligences that they now, you know, use to quantify, you know, different areas that people have. So this one that I wanted to bring up, Jeremy Schuler, math prodigy, you know, obviously very, very intelligent, you know, the whole college at, you know, ridiculous age, you know, thing, but it's his language acquisition that really intrigued me. His mom first noticed that her son was unusually advanced at 17 months. She says, I was writing an email to my friend and I was using, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, Hangul. It's the Korean alphabet. And Jeremy was curious about that. So I wrote down all the consonants and vowels, and then I made the sound. The next day, she found Jeremy comfortably reading Hangul, you know, all by himself. So once he realized that English syllables worked the same way as Korean ones, he almost immediately taught himself to read English too. So he was able to read full books on his own by the time he turned two. You know, so anyway, just there's a lot of them that go to college young, but, you know, that's very interesting. Now, both of these, his parents are aerospace engineers. So apparently intelligence runs in the family for him, and he's normal. He's a prodigy. He's not got any limitations of any kind. So are you a savant? So some people have argued through the years, oh, well, you know, these smarts come at a cost, you know, brain damage or, you know, that makes up for missing skills. But the world's leading authority on savants and prodigies or amazing abilities is Dr. Daryl Treffert. And he believes these abilities are in all of this. And they actually have done successful experiments with high-powered magnets and turning on and off certain parts of the brain. Like they'll suppress one area of the brain so it allows the other ones to function at a higher level. And they can actually turn on savant abilities, not to the crazy level extent that you see in some of these people, but you can actually turn on savant abilities by doing this. So anyway, one example of an acquired savant, so the ability wasn't there before, but Orlando Sorrell, when he was age 10, he was hit in the left side of his head with a baseball. And after the headaches went away, he could remember the weather, where he was and what he was doing every day since then. He could also calendar calculate. So you tell him a day, a date, and he'll tell you, oh, that was a Tuesday. So whether it was in the future or the past, you know, you just name a date and he'll tell you what it was. So another guy that was hit, Jason Paget, he was acquired savant in the math and fractal area. And geometry, stuff like that. He was beat up one night and he ended up with a severe concussion. And after that, you know, if something moves in our field of vision, you see a fluid movement. You don't see it staccato. But after that, he would see like almost like somebody was putting picture frames one after another, like those little books that you know, like those little comic books and you flip through it and it animates it, makes it look like it's moving by itself. That's the way he sees now when, you know, the wind rustles through the trees, he sees picture frames of stuff. And what he realized he was seeing was like these, it was literally like he was seeing math and seeing geometry and seeing equations. And he thought he was going crazy. And so he went from a typical, you know, party person. He said, I was just a young beer drinking, you know, girl chasing party person to now, like if you listen to interviews with him, like I listened to an interview a couple of days ago, absolutely bizarre and amazing his grasp of math and stuff. I'll give you an example of what he started drawing all these things in an effort to try to tell people what he was seeing. And he was drawing these in the mall one day, and a physicist, you know, that was sitting near him saw him drawing it and said, you look like you're trying to talk about space and time in the discrete structure of the universe, but I've never seen anybody do it in layman's terms before. Have you ever thought about taking a math class? So he ended up going back to school and went to college. His math abilities are absolutely amazing. Let me show you another couple of them. He just draws all these beautiful things. He aced all his math classes. He said calculus explains what he's doing and seeing. And so basically what I take this as, there's an undergirding ability that humans have to be able to, you know, to gauge distance, to be able to function and walk and stuff like that. We're doing math constantly in our heads. And he's now able to see that layer of the brain is calculating and managing that daily thing that you and I are doing naturally. He's now able to see it taking place, what we just kind of normally don't see for ourselves. So Jason said, whenever I see something move, this is exact quote. He says, I have a 2-month-old daughter. And when I see her track my finger, you know, back and forth, When you crunch that as an equation, it's a serious equation, and yet she's doing it naturally, and we're all doing it. We're just not aware of it. To me, he said, without question, he said that with great emphasis, to me, without question, we come with, at minimum, high level of calculus software. It's just that we're doing it in a geometric sense. So that was his conclusion after studying all this stuff as an adult now. Let's see here. And I'm going to, give you just a couple other quotes quick. I think this is interesting. He said several things that are impressive to me about the Choired Savant. Daryl Treffert. Sorry, I've got this labeled wrong. He said several things that are impressive to me about the Choired Savant, this new area where there is this release of stored information, things that a person knows but never learned. The question is, like, how did it get there? He said, I think, just like you said, because this was in the interview to Jason, he said, just like you said, that the brain comes loaded with all these kinds of software. There's times that people have this idea that we're sort of born with a blank disk and that we become what we put in there. And that's kind of that whole nurture part. But his opinion was, and to my knowledge, he's not a Christian, but I find this very interesting that as a professional, this is his conclusion. He said, and with both the congenital and acquired savant, so people born with savant abilities or they acquire them through an accident, I'm convinced that the brain comes loaded with all sorts of software factory installed. In other words, we're born with it. We simply don't have access to that normally. In the acquired savant, and there's something that he talks about, this whole thing of three R's. In the acquired savant, we have access to this and a release of those abilities that's that search that I'm on, I guess, how to explain that. And I think that it can be explained genetically through the transfer of DNA. The ability of DNA to store information is simply astronomical. You can put the whole Library of Congress on a single speck of DNA, for example. So it's not magical to think that it could be transferred genetically. So anyway, long story short, let me just put it in my own words. He basically came to the conclusion after a lifetime of research that we're born this way. So, every intelligent doctor, a neurosurgeon or scientist, they can gloss over this issue, but somebody like him that has to pull apart this issue and ask, how did we get this stuff? He came to the conclusion it's innate, so that we're born that way. So the question, the million-dollar question that you have to answer, and we're just going to bring this up quick before we do another few fun savants, the million-dollar question we're all answering is, all right, so it's factory installed now. It's being passed from person to person genetically. But was it originally from mutation after mutation that added all this DNA and information slowly into us, and now this is where we're at? Or was mutation after mutation through these, centuries and millennia been slowly causing us to lose this information that we were originally born with? Where did all that genetic information to cause, again, a human being goes from one cell to an entire fully functioning human being in 9 months. Nothing grows that fast except cancer. But these things, we take it for granted how amazing these abilities are that we have, and it's a 9-month period that causes the entire creation of this. So just something to think about. Are we getting dumber, shorter, and uglier, or are we getting better, like evolution says? So Derek Amato is an acquired savant in music. He played guitar in high school, so he was familiar with music, but he never had played the piano. And 5 days after getting hit on the head, basically, he sat down and played it as if he was playing it for years. And he said these black and white boxes, kind of like a piano keyboard, but he sees these boxes that go across this field of vision, and that's what he plays. Now, to be honest, if you look him up, I think he's, to be honest, a little bit cocky, and he's milking this for all it's worth, these new abilities. I think, not to be mean, but he's trying to make some money off of this. And I wouldn't say that all his music is fabulous, but it's definitely an ability that wasn't there before. And I'm going to play you just a little clip of that so you can get an idea of what it's like.
I had never touched a piano. I was a regular kid. I played baseball and chased girls, like boys do. I dove into a swimming pool 9.5 years ago to catch a football, and I hit my head in the shallow end of the pool. Basically, when I got back from the hospital, I slept for 5 days. On the fifth day, I woke up, and that's when I walked up to the piano. It was dusty. I knew nothing of it, how to play it, and I was just hoping to hit a couple notes, and that's when my hands just kind of went crazy, and I was playing fluid. It was instant. There was no building up or rehearsing or practicing. I don't even remember being really shocked. I was just kind of like something profound was happening.
You know, I don't know where the music comes from. I can tell you that Derek couldn't do it before. And it's amazing. It really is. It brings tears to people's eyes.
Anyway, again, there's fun documentaries on all these people. If you find this topic fascinating, you can explore it more. Dr. Tony Sicoria, again, music, he's a practicing orthopedic surgeon. In 1994, at age 42, he was struck by lightning at a telephone booth after hanging up. And after several weeks of memory and sluggishness issues, he got back to normal, but with an insatiable desire to listen to piano music. He had no previous interest in music, and he had to teach himself to play. So this is not one of those situations where, wow, all of a sudden I can play music and I couldn't before. So he taught himself to play, but in 3 months' time, he then was just spending all his time composing and playing music because he just was obsessed with it. So his head flooded with music that just seemed to come from nowhere, and he does have music out. Anyway, art. I'm going to play you a little clip here from Alonzo Clemons.
Alonzo Clemons is able to work part-time.
Do you like your job at the Y?
Yeah, big trash.
Uh-huh.
But a childhood accident left him with a traumatic brain injury. He can't read or write or do math.
This is your studio, yeah, as it were.
And yet, astonishingly, he can do this.
When did you make him?
On the weekend.
This past weekend?
Yeah. Oh.
As naturally as the rest of us breathe, Alonzo can sculpt. His meticulous creations fill his Boulder, Colorado apartment. He's made hundreds of them, all with his bare hands.
When you make an animal, what are you thinking about?
Run around my pasture.
Do you can see it running in the pasture?
Yeah.
This is the clay, and this is how you start every piece.
Yeah.
He can't explain how he does it.
What are you going to make?
Horse.
But he loves to show you how.
So you just use your fingers.
Yeah.
We watched him work out every detail, from the mane to the muscles, all with apparent ease.
Is Alonzo a savant?
Yes. No question. Hi.
Psychiatrist Daryl Trefford is research director at the Trefford Center in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin.
This is the largest planet, Jupiter.
And is a leading expert on savants of all ages.
67 satellites.
Savant syndrome is a rare but remarkable condition in which someone with a disability has a striking ability that stands in stark contrast to overall handicap.
Dr. Trefford says Alonzo is what's called an acquired savant. It's believed that his head injury somehow rewired his brain.
He's coming along,
isn't he?
Damaging cognitive abilities, but freeing up extraordinary artistic gifts.
Oh, that took you 15 minutes at most. I could take 15 years and I couldn't do that.
Do you think Alonzo would be making horses today if he'd never had that accident?
Probably not.
That's Dr. Daryl Trefford, the world's leading authority on that. Stephen Wilshire, autistic savant, and I'm just going to go ahead and play you quick for the sake of time.
I'm Stephen Wilshire. I do drawings.
Stephen is an artist who creates incredibly intricate drawings of cityscapes.
I love drawing tall buildings, tall skyscrapers, skylines, street scenes.
And he does this entirely from memory. When Stephen was 3, he was diagnosed as autistic. He was completely mute and lived entirely in his own world. Early on, Stephen's teachers noticed he loved to draw. He had found his way to connect with others. Stephen has the ability to look at a subject once and then draw an accurate and detailed picture of it, including panoramas of entire cities based off just a quick look.
I go up on a helicopter and then memorize it. And then after being on a helicopter and then straight back at the hotel and then start to draw.
His incredible talent launched an artistic career that has taken him around the world.
Los Angeles, Dubai, Houston, Texas, and Tokyo in Japan.
And that's just to name a few.
New York's my favorite, Empire State Building, Chrysler Building, and there are lots of yellow New York taxi cabs.
And Stephen has no plans of stopping anytime.
So he's fascinating. When they flew him over Rome, he's so detailed that he got the number of columns in the Parthenon correct. So he's very unusual. Alan Morgan, language acquisition. He's 81, evacuated to Wales in World War II, but left at the age of 10 for England, where he lived for 70 years. So he was surrounded by Welsh speakers when he was young, but never learned it. He had a stroke, you know, later in life, regained consciousness 3 weeks later, speaking Welsh, but couldn't remember English. So now he's learning English again. And there are cases of foreign accent syndrome, if you're familiar with that, where people end up post-stroke with a different accent. But we've not seen it where an entire language that was dormant is then suddenly released by a stroke. So it's just amazing what the brain's capable of. Another interesting one is this, they gave 28 volunteers a puzzle that had stumped lab subjects for 50 years. And they gave them transcranial direct current stimulation. And more than 40% were able to solve it, whereas none of the control group were able to. So brain damage can do positive things, eliminating stuttering, enhancing memory in monkeys and rats, and even restoring lost eyesight in animals. It's really quite amazing. I've got a couple left that I want to do quick. It's just going to finish fleshing out some.
Sounds of something. 好激昂的, 好激昂的, 每一下要撞爛的石頭,
4 years old. And then this. Can't do a Rubik cube with my eyes open. If you give me 5 hours, I still can't do that. So, you know, again, people's abilities to remember or to do things are just bizarre, but this probably takes the cake as far as unusual abilities.
This is the size of the pellet Machi-san would try to slice with his sword.
I honestly don't believe I could cut this if it was stationary on a chopping block with a chef knife. He's going to do it while it's flying through the air with a samurai sword.
Not only is the pellet tiny, over 4,000 times smaller than a baseball, but when it leaves the barrel of the BB gun, it's traveling over 200 miles per hour. A normal person would have no chance of seeing the pellet. So we're using a slow motion camera to slow the action down by 250 times. And helping me is Dr. Ramani Durvasula.
Okay, we're ready, Kay.
Kay is going to fire the pellet at Machi-san from a distance of 70 feet.
Okay.
Oh, I heard it, but I didn't see it.
I saw a flash, the blade went by. All right, so we're gonna play back.
Using the slow motion camera, I want to see if Machi-san has achieved the superhuman.
You can see the piece go one way, and the other one go that way. That was amazing.
But how does Dr. Romani explain what she's just witnessed?
This is about processing at an entirely different sensory level, because he's not visually processing. This is a different level of anticipatory processing, something so procedural, something so fluid for him.
A normal person would take 0.3 seconds just to register the sound of the gun being fired before they can even start to think about reacting. By the time they move the sword into position, the pellet would have traveled past them.
I think, yep, this is the one. You can see the little nick in it.
So, anyway, is that prodigy? Is that normal? The line starts to blur sometimes. Can you learn that? Was he born that way but enhanced it? Can all of us do that? You know, if we're hitting the head, I don't know. One last one. This is a singer. She's, you know, blushing with, you know, fascination at this handsome man singing, you know, with her. And she's like, oh yeah, I gotta sing next, you know. It's fascinating to see all these different abilities. But this is why I wanted to bring it all up. I wanted to just flesh out just some, and it's only scratching the surface. There are so many different abilities, and I haven't even brought them all up, but it's not just a bunch of fun facts. In my opinion, it shows that there was a really lavish God that gave us tremendous, tremendous gifts. And if we had not sinned, we would have just gone on using these all different, you know, abilities, building architecture and making music and all these different things. And after 6,000 years of sin, if we still see all of this level of beauty and ability and intelligence and all of this, if you wrap it all up into one, it kind of gives you an idea of what we were all like at one point, and more importantly, what we're going to be someday. So I personally believe the word of God. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and that you're not an accident. All right, that's it. So should I stop the recording then?